When we last checked in with the Coast Guard Commandant, Admiral Paul Zukunft, the service was operating under a continuing resolution. He told us that funding was not keeping in pace with the Coast Guard's need for better infrastructure. And that meant the Coast Guard wasn't keeping pace with some of its most important missions, like stopping drug runners, because of those funding problems. Now, at least one thing is different. The service has a full budget for the remainder of the year. Zukunft is standing by with Emily Kopp at the Sea Air Space 2015 conference at National Harbor. Emily.
Thank you, Tom. First of all, great to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. So you're not under a CR. I guess things are much better now.
The uncertainty is behind us, and that's always a good thing, Emily. We do have a budget. It's a challenging one, though. The budget that we have for fiscal year 15 actually takes us to a level below where we were when we had sequestration in fiscal year 13. So challenges still remain.
So what does that mean? What does the Coast Guard look like this year?
Well, the funding did go to keep us in operation. So it does not diminish our ability to operate, and we're having great success. Intelligence is driving operations. I've doubled our presence in the drug transit zones. But what it does do is it slows down our acquisition at a point in time where we do need to modernize our fleet.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing on the acquisition front, because at least the certainty of a real budget means that you can do some planning ahead.
Yeah, and I'm very thankful. We're able to fund our 8th National Security Cutter that completes that program of record. We will go to full rate production. We're recompeting the Fast Response Cutter. Tremendous platforms led by a lieutenant, crew of 22. And these are just wonderful platforms. The next big piece is going to be our offshore patrol cutter. We'll down select next year, and we will build 25 of these. This will be the largest acquisition in Coast Guard history. And it doesn't even address polar icebreakers. It's not in the budget, and that's a $1 billion cap that we have right now to recapitalize our polar capability.
Talk a little bit about that. I mean, at Sea Air Space here, you'll be talking about the Arctic as one of your top priorities. You have two icebreakers right now. What do they let you do compared to what you think you're going to need to do in the future?
Yeah, so we have no spares. So when I send our only heavy icebreaker down to Antarctica, and should it suffer a casualty, the United States has no rescue capability whatsoever. In the Arctic, we're seeing about a 400% increase in human activity. Shell Oil is seeking to get its permits to drill in the Arctic, where, as most people know, vast riches, about 13% of the world's oil, about a third of the world's natural gas is in the Arctic domain. And as the most prosperous nation in the world, we have two icebreakers. Russia has 1/8 our GDP. They have 27. And we're seeing Russia exert influence that are counterintuitive to the Law of the Sea Convention, but that's another challenge we have in the United States. Ratified the Law of the Sea Convention.
So 2 to 27, that's quite that's quite the odds. But it also brings to bear the fact that if your budget is not that much better than it was just a few years ago, you have gone through some really hard times. How do you think the Coast Guard has gotten smarter with the limited resources that it has had?
Yeah, it really comes down to intel driving operations. And I've told at other venues, we have awareness on at least 80% of the drug flow on the water. And when drugs are being moved on the water, transshipped to shore, they're most vulnerable at sea. So it's great that I have that much intelligence, but I only have enough resources, aircraft and ships, to divert and take action against 20% of that. So we've got this great wealth of information, but I can only act on 20%. 60% literally get a free pass.
What are you going to do about that?
Well, we're working here at Sea Air Space. We've got a number of our allies. We're working with the Royal Navy, with the Dutch, with the French, and the Canadians. And so we have their ships are helping us with this effort, as the Navy has for many years right now. We put Coast Guard law enforcement teams on those to increase our presence. So we're doing better than 20% right now because of the help we're getting from our allies and from the U.S. Navy.
And talk a little bit about the collaboration with the Navy. It's another sea power that doesn't have the resources that it would like to complete its mission. How's the Coast Guard and the Navy working together?
Very well. We just signed out the cooperative strategy for the 21st century, signed by the Chief of Naval Operations, Commandant of the Marine Corps, Commandant of the Coast Guard. And so we look regionally across the world, and the Navy must rebalance with other threats around the world. And we look at the Western Hemisphere, where our authorities, 41 treaties with other countries, resonate best here in the Western Hemisphere. So as the Navy rebalances, the Coast Guard refocuses and fills some of the gaps that the Navy will have to create in order to fill mission demands elsewhere in the world.
Because the Navy is looking more to Asia.
Right.
And so the Coast Guard will be more of the power here in this hemisphere.
Yeah, it provides a U.S. maritime presence globally, where our capabilities resonate best.
Talk a little bit about cyber. That's one of the things that you're going to be speaking about here. Of course, it's a big issue for everyone. It does seem like there is more awareness and Congress is more willing to fund cyber priorities now.
Yeah, and I'll be giving a talk tomorrow during lunch at Sea Air Space on cyber. When you look at our maritime commerce, and about 90% of our commerce moves by sea. But when you look at the facilities that move that cargo, about 90% of that infrastructure is fully automated as well. And so if there was malware introduced into that infrastructure, it would have a dramatic impact on our economy. We saw what happened when there was a work slowdown on the West Coast. That was a man-made one, but if there was a cyber event, it could be catastrophic. So the Coast Guard is rolling out a cyber strategy, working with industry. What are the best standards to defend against a cyber attack within the private sector, which is critical to our economic security?
Has there ever been a test of this? Has there been a cyber hack or attack that tested these sorts of port capabilities?
We're able to do that internally. And so we have a cyber command within the Coast Guard. And so we could look at our systems and we can screen those to see if there is any malware that's been introduced. And so we can do that with our systems.
Yeah.
Now, can we inspect the private sector to be able to do so? And the answer to that, when it comes to maritime, is yes, under the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002. And industry is looking to the Coast Guard to better defend its defenses, if you will, against a cyber event.
And so that means you're working closely with your DHS counterpart, Customs and Border Patrol, rather, as well.
Exactly. And this resonates with the National Protection Division within the Department of Homeland Security as well, which has a huge role when it comes to cyber.
We're speaking with Admiral Paul Zukunft. He's the Coast Guard Commandant. And I want to ask you a little bit of your personal journey so far. You are almost a year into being the head of the Coast Guard. What do you think has been the biggest success and also the biggest challenge of your first year?
Yeah, the biggest success, one, we could not be better aligned with our Department of Homeland Security. The other is just...
And do you think that's gotten better over the last year?
It is tremendous. We truly have unity of effort. And it took Goldwater Nichols many, many years for the Department of Defense to become joint. We are now joint within the Department of Homeland Security, really under the leadership of Secretary Jay Johnson, who has really stepped up to the plate in that regard. It's also great to get out and see the people that volunteer to serve in the Coast Guard, the best I have seen in my 38-year career. I was at the Coast Guard Academy just 2 days ago. We have several Fulbright scholars, and these young men and women are going to be tremendous leaders. And the same coming into our recruit training center in Cape May. Many of our new entries coming into the Coast Guard already have college degrees. Some have master's degrees in their E2s in the Coast Guard. A tremendous human resource capital I have at my disposal. No big surprise, my biggest challenge is how do I recapitalize, how do I modernize the Coast Guard, which right now is operating 50-year-old ships, 20 years beyond their lifetime, and will operate those for at least another 5 years before the reliefs arrive, and we have a new fleet of ships going out there. So we've got these great people coming in, and then I send them out to the field, and they say, wow, this is a museum. But we're doing operations from museums as I speak today.
Yeah. What does 2016 look like? What do you think? What are you asking Congress for? And what do you think will realistically happen? Will you see relief on that end?
Two big events in 16. One will go to full rate production on our fast response cutters, 154-foot patrol boat commanded by a lieutenant, and we'll build six of those each year. But the big decision is our down select for the offshore patrol cutter. We have three competitors right now. Our stable requirements are out there, fixed contract pricing on this. It's going to be a tremendous asset for our nation. And so we will down select that in 16 and then move forward. So that will be a big milestone event for the Coast Guard next year.
Finally, I want to ask you about somebody who you've written about in the last couple of weeks, Dr. Olivia Hooker. Explain a little bit who she was and why she means something to you.
Yeah, Dr. Olivia Hooker is a legend in her time. She just turned 100 years old. I called her on her 100th birthday, and actually I called her twice. The first time she said, well, you tell that young man I'm getting my hair done, and he can call me later. Very savvy. She was our first African-American female to enlist. She was a SPAR during World War II, but even goes before that. When she was 6 years old, she lived through the Tulsa riots, probably the worst riots, race riots, in our nation's history. A very dark period, but she changed the world, and she put that behind her in just a very generous, giving life. And we named a Coast Guard training facility after Dr. Olivia Hooker to make sure that her legacy lives on. Just a tremendous woman, and could not be more proud that she served in our Coast Guard during a time of war.
And this training facility is where?
It's in New York at Staten Island, but we're also naming another facility here in Washington, D.C. as well. So she is so great. We've got two buildings named after her.
That's quite an honor. Well, Admiral, thank you so much.
Thank you, Emily.